Hello, this is Bob Kruger from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Thought for Food for September 2010. We like to think that with the coming of Labor Day, observed this year on September the 6th, that summer is over. With the high temperatures we've experienced this summer, we may have some doubts about cooler weather coming soon. Officially, the first day of autumn is September 23rd. We can only hope for some more comfortable weather. Hot weather is not always negative for some businesses. McDonald's lesson from July. If you want to start selling cold, fruity drinks, pick one of the hottest months in U.S. history. The fast food giant posted its biggest monthly increase in more than a year as customers gave the chain's new fruit smoothies and ice-cold frappies a warm reception. The increase shows just how much McDonald's is outpacing its competitors as customers keep flocking to the world's largest hamburger chain while rivals post anemic U.S. sales. Shares touched an all-time high on August the 10th. They're pretty impressive results, said Morningstar restaurant analyst R.J. Hatovi. It just shows that the smoothies products have been a big win for the company and a big hit among the consumers. They did well with timing of the product. July sales at restaurants open for at least 13 months rose 5.7%, the biggest monthly increase since the 6.1% increase in April of 2009. At the same time, the National Weather Service said the month was one of the hottest on records nationwide, shattering records in many East Coast cities. Overall, McDonald's said the sales measure rose 7% around the globe and outpaced expectations. It climbed 5.3% in Europe and 10.1% in the rest of the world. The figure is considered an important gauge of a restaurant chain's performance because it excludes the effects of restaurants that opened or closed during the year. McDonald's said that U.S. consumers flocked to its roughly 14,000 restaurants during the month seeking its new drinks, which are part of the restaurant chain's rapidly expanding beverage lineup. In addition to the highly profitable smoothies that were launched nationwide in mid-July, customers also sought out the company's value meals. Menu items such as those have kept McDonald's a step ahead of their competitors, particularly in the United States, where its value menu helped insulate it from much of the economic weakness that hurt Burger King and the Wendy's Arby's group. What should we be able to find at a local farmer's market this time of year? The 2010 apple crop is coming to market. While most of the apple varieties are picked in October, some varieties ripen sooner, and they're coming to the market now. Locally grown cabbage and greens are available now, as are the very first of the sweet potato crop. Those farmers who have sources of irrigation still have tomatoes and other fresh vegetables for sale. While most of the local peach crop has been harvested, some fresh peaches can be found. Some folks are not bothered by the old wives' tale of Friday the 13th being unlucky. Case in point, our locally based Golden Corral restaurant chain. On August 13th, they reopened their flagship restaurant on Glenwood Avenue with a revamped model that promises fresh ingredients, more food, and a modern look and a bit of wow. The Pavilion, as the company calls the redesign, is a strategic move designed to excite customers and Golden Corral hopes, draw them through the doors at a time when most families are cutting back and family buffet chains are struggling. In 2009, the family steak restaurant category saw an overall 4.9% drop in sales, according to the Chicago research firm Technomic. But Golden Corral, which is number one in the industry, has bucked the trend, showing a 2.5% sales increase in 2009. The company credits some of its growth to its new model, which has introduced in a limited number of markets over the past 3 years. Now, after a bit of tweaking, it's ready for a company-wide launch. And over the next 7 years, all of the chain's 484 restaurants will be renovated. This is the third time in the company's 37-year history that the chain has completely remodeled its stores. There are a lot of buffets out there, said Lance Trenary, the senior vice president of operations, but a lot of them are what can you do to chicken 50 ways. The first Pavilion restaurant opened in Broadmoor, Ohio, 3 years ago, and since then, local Golden Corral executives have made tweaks and redesigned areas that didn't work. The walk section, for instance, used to be called the Pagoda, but company officials decided the name didn't relate to the food. Now comfortable with the new design, the company is working in 30 locations to renovate various restaurants, including some owned by franchisees, Trenary said. In the Triangle, the restaurant on Millbrook Road in Raleigh will close this year to undergo a similar renovation. The Garner Outlet will be renovated as well. If you don't keep it really fresh and exciting to the guest, then it gets boring, Mr. Trenery said. That's the right attitude, especially in the super competitive restaurant business, says Darren Tristano, the executive vice president for the Chicago food industry research firm Technomic. Chains such as Golden Corral are competing directly with the likes of Applebee's and Chili's for customers who are looking to dine for $10 to $15. There's an abundance of restaurants that you can choose from, Tristano said. In their latest ad, they're going after Chili's directly. It was, here's ribs and all you can eat. Golden Corral officials declined to say how much the overhaul is costing, but they say they are sure the investment will pay off. It costs 25 to 30% more than our traditional building would cost, but we found that the volume of customers in our stores is about double, Trenery said. In addition, the new stores require more manpower, 150 employees instead of 50. For the customers, there is a cost for all the upgrades. Golden Corral has raised the price of its dinner buffet from $10.19 to $10.39. Lunch is $7.99. Trenery said it was possible to keep the price increase small because the new restaurants bring in so many additional customers. Our whole marketing strategy is to get it around $10, he said. It's all based on volume. In addition to simply offering more food, one key to the new model is to upgrade the food quality. Trenery said Asian-inspired foods at The Walk will rival dishes at popular Asian food chains. Seafood lovers will be able to order such fish as tuna and tilapia cooked to order. They have sweetened up their menu. In the case you're unsatisfied with Salisbury steaks and a soft serve, you can now treat yourself to a chocolate fountain or a donut after it. The latter you make yourself. Basically, the dessert experience has now caught up with the buffet. Watch it at that chocolate fountain. You can easily end up with chocolate on your hands. Don't ask me how I know. Upgrading the food is a smart strategy when customers are demanding more for the money, Tristano said. McDonald's has always been very successful at this. McDonald's went from a burger to the Angus burger, from salad shaker to premium salad, bad coffee to premium coffee. If your volume will support it, there's no reason to think you can't upgrade. McDonald's going from $2 to $4 for a burger is a tough sell. It's probably not going as quickly as they would like, but adding 20 cents to the price of the Golden Corral buffet and improving the quality should be an easy sell. I'm going to have to check out the new pavilion. The only trouble I find with these types of eating places is that I tend to eat far too much. By the time this program is aired, the Chapel Hill Krispy Kreme store will be opened. Opening date was August 25th. The store is at 157 Franklin Street in the former Firehouse Subs location. The donuts for this store will be made at the Person Street location here in Raleigh, but they'll be glazed on location in Chapel Hill, which means there will be one of the company's iconic Hot Now lights blazing in the window. The first customer in line at the grand opening will win a dozen donuts every week for a year. The following 99 people will receive a dozen donuts a month for a year, and they will get a Carolina Blue Krispy Kreme t-shirt. North Carolina has started a new offensive against diabetes in children, announcing that five other counties will begin replicating a Wake County program that helps reverse early signs of the disease. The Energize program, which Wake Med established in 2005, has taught 400 children who were likely to develop type 2 diabetes how to make more healthful diet and exercise choices. A survey of participants a year after they completed the program indicate 70% of them have neutralized dangerous health conditions such as high blood sugar, elevated cholesterol, and high blood pressure. State public health leaders will introduce Energize in five other counties, Gaston, Johnston, Nash, Robeson, and Wilkes. Each hopes to screen up to 100 children and enroll as many as possible. The fund is expanded by a one-time $250,000 grant from the General Assembly. Type 2 diabetes was once considered an adult disease that was rarely seen in children. But in recent years, an alarming number of cases have been confirmed in children, causing concern among medical and public health leaders about the future of the nation's younger generation. The consequence of ignoring this problem will be tens of thousands of young adults in North Carolina disabled with blindness, amputations, kidney failure, strokes, and heart disease, said Dr. John Busey, a UNC Chapel Hill endocrinologist and president of medicine and science for the American Diabetes Association. Cost associated with the diabetes was estimated at $132 billion, according to the American Diabetes Association. The exact number of children diagnosed with the disease has not been established, but reports from doctors' offices indicate that up to 45% of all new pediatric diabetes cases are now type 2 diabetes, which is associated with being overweight and sedentary. In years past, children primarily were only diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, which is an autoimmune disorder thought to have genetic roots. Children in the Southeast, which has higher rates of obesity and activity among children, are particularly prone to type 2 diabetes, according to the Trust for America's Health, a national health advocacy group. Programs such as Weight Meds Energize are seen as frontline efforts in the battle. During the sessions that meet three nights a week, children are coached to drink water rather than sugar-sweetened drinks and to spend time each day moving instead of plopping down in front of the computer or the television after school. The program has showed lasting results that have encouraged health officials. 1 year after completing the program, half the participants had maintained their weight or had dropped pounds. About 70% of the children who started out with elevated blood sugar levels are in the normal range 12 months later. And 70% of the children with either high blood pressure or cholesterol levels were normal a year out. Being overweight and having high blood glucose, cholesterol, and blood pressure readings are all early indications that type 2 diabetes may be developing. What Energize shows is that type 2 diabetes can be essentially cured by weight loss and a healthy lifestyle, said Dr. Mark Peel, and his name is spelled P-I-E-H-L, a WakeMed pediatrician and founder of the Energize program. It's something we can detect, prevent, and treat with pretty simple common sense things. There's another evidence that Energize in teaching children healthier habits trickles upstream, motivating entire families to shape up. WakeMed encouraged families to change by asking that parents attend a family night once a week. The program also provides participants and families with a temporary fitness club membership at WakeMed, the YMCA, or the Raleigh Parks and Recreation Facilities. It's encouraging to learn that this program is being adopted by five more counties. We wish them well. It won't be long before the annual North Carolina State Fair will take place here in Raleigh, and one of the attractions and also what we remember about state fairs is food. Cheeseburgers, Krispy Kreme donuts, a cheeseburger on a grilled Krispy Kreme donut, A popular dish on the fair circuit this year is the Krispy Kreme cheeseburger. At the Wisconsin State Fair, which ended August the 15th, it sold for $5. For an extra buck, you can add chocolate-covered bacon. And the burger packs an eye-glazing 1,000 calories, according to the vendor. A regular Krispy Kreme donut, glazed, has 200 calories. The Krispy Burger has been around for years, dubbed the Luther, supposedly for the late singer Luther Vandross's love of them. It's on the menu at restaurants in Georgia and elsewhere. Sometimes it's served with a fried egg on top. David Sparks, the director of the Dixie Classic Fair in Winston-Salem, said he hadn't heard of any vendors who plan to sell it at the fair, which will begin October the 1st. I think I'd be surprised if somebody doesn't do it, this being the home of Krispy Kreme, Sparks said. It may end up with one of the local food booths may try it. It's a fairly simple idea. Mr. Sparks keeps track of new fair foods. Popular items this year include fried Dr. Pepper, and I wonder how they do that. Battered and fried frozen sodas and breaded spaghetti and meatballs on a stick. The notion of a Krispy Kreme cheeseburger does not appeal to Ashley Winton, a dietitian at Wake Forest University's Baptist Medical Center. It's probably a walking heart attack, she said. We'll have to wait to learn if this calorie-laden burger makes the state fair. From time to time, the News and Observer profiles local people who are involved in the raising and selling of locally produced fruit and vegetables. Such a person is Spanky Creech. It was about 95 degrees in the steamy parking lot, but Spanky Creech didn't seem to notice. Mr. Creech, who sells local produce from a stand on North Carolina Highway 42 and Cleveland Road in Johnson County, he barely breaks a sweat as he hustles about unloading more produce to display and helping customers cart watermelons to the car. This is absolutely positively delicious, like candy, he tells one woman, offering her a watermelon from the bed of his old pickup. Summertime is when produce stand crops up at many busy intersections around Johnson County as area farmers harvest melons, corn, squash, and other vegetables. Some farmers take to the roadside themselves, and others sell to folks like Creech, who serve as low overhead middlemen. Much of the produce that Creech sells come from farmers in the Salemburg area of Sampson County. Several of them, he said, are turkey farmers who tend a small watermelon patch on the side. Operations that are too small to attract wholesale distributors, so the farmers have to rely on themselves or on vendors to sell their goods directly to the public. Creech says customers trust him to find the best produce and to get it to them fresh. I know how to get the stuff that people want, said Creech, who's been selling for more than 30 years at locations around the county. It's about shopping with someone who sells stuff ripe. Throughout the harvest months, he visits five or six farmers early in the morning, loads up his truck before driving to his corner in the Cleveland community. He is usually there, regardless of the weather, from 9 a.m. until about 7 p.m. Thursday through Monday. Tuesdays and Wednesdays serve as his weekends, since fewer people are out and about. In winter months, he makes his living selling secondhand items at flea markets. It's all that I've done, Mr. Creech said, adding that the best part of the job is running into friends he hadn't seen in years. Sometime in the past, I mentioned camel's milk as a possible health food, and here's an update from Dubai in the United Arab Emirates. The camels know the drill by heart. Just after dawn, they file in on their own, always in groups of 12, into metal stalls for milking. Workers attach automated pumps, and the milk flows into chilled pipes that enter into a sealed metal vat. The next stop someday could be markets in Europe and possibly beyond, under the ambitious plans backed by Dubai's ruler to expand the reach of the playfully eccentric brand name Camelicious. European Union health regulators in July cleared the United Arab Emirates to become the first major exporter of camel milk products to the 27-nation bloc. If on-site inspections and other European Union tests pass muster, the first batches of powdered camel's milk will head to Europe's shelves next year and possible to Asia and America later. We know this is what would be called a mainstream product in the West, said David Wernery, a legal advisor for the Camelition brand, whose parent company goes by the names Emirates Industry for Camel Milk and Products. We're thinking about health food stores and alternative markets. It's probably going to be a niche thing at first. It would be something of a coming-out party for those who describe camel's milk in awed terms. It has at least three times more vitamin C than cow's milk and is considered an alternative for the lactose intolerant. Researchers have studied possible roles for camel's milk in fighting bacteria, tumors, and diabetes, as well as a treatment for liver disease across the range from Central Asia to North Africa. For Dubai's ruler, Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, a camelicious foothold in Europe would mark a pet dairy project growing up. Werner's veterinarian father, Ulrich, made a pitch about a camel dairy to Sheikh Mohammed a decade ago. I told him, you race camels, why not milk them, said the elderly Wernery, who first became enamored with camels while working in Somalia in the 1970s. The sheikh didn't give an immediate answer, so Wernery went ahead and created a small pilot dairy in 2000 with about a dozen camels outside of his research and animal care clinic in Dubai. 3 years later, Sheikh Mohammed called. He was ready to fund the dairy. At that time, Dubai's growth was starting to swallow the desert in huge bites. Sheikh Mohammed has always liked the bold stroke, and being a patron to the region's first model camel farm fit nicely as a sideline venture. David Wernery and his mother cooked up the name Camelicious. Their initial worry that the normal customer might find camel's milk well disgusting. Hopefully this was negated by the reference to delicious, he said. The company, which began operations in 2006, quickly stood out on dairy shelves with its logo, a bug-eyed cartoon camel with violet-colored sunglasses. And new flavors were added, now up to chocolate, saffron, date, and strawberry. Its official corporate image, a camel silhouette under a silver moon, is on its other products, including camel milk chocolates and Laban, a traditional yogurt drink. We're still doing market surveys in Europe, said David Wernery. We really like the cartoon Campbell logo, but we wonder if that's the right image for a health food product. We're still working on it. And we wonder when and if Camel's milk products will ever come to this country. One of the newest trends in cool foods in this area is frozen yogurt, often referred to as Froyo. It starts with the first step through the shop door into a bright citrus-colored haven with frozen yogurt machines lined up along one wall and all the toppings the dessert lover could ask for in a three-deep row of candy dishes on the counter. It's the cheerful decor, it's the upbeat music, but most of all, it's the habit-forming tang of the frozen yogurts itself, said Linda Lensmeyer, the co-owner of Freshberry Frozen Yogurt Cafe in North Raleigh and newly converted Froyo enthusiast. Customers do say it's kind of addictive, she said. Linda and her husband John are on the front lines if the Raleigh field has a scrappy underdog in this increasingly competitive market. Freshberry opened on April the 29th. Already this family-run shop has decided to expand to a Hillsborough Street location near North Carolina State University. It is one of at least a half dozen yogurt shops open or getting ready to open in Raleigh in the coming months. So what's the big deal? Why frozen yogurt? Why now? Ice cream rose to dominate the frozen dessert wars over the past decade via rapidly expanding premium ice cream chains such as Cold Stone Creamery, said Darren Trostino, the executive vice president and restaurant analyst for the Chicago-based research and consulting firm Technomic. Froyo began its comeback about 5 years ago. Shops in Los Angeles and New York gained notice because of the reputation of some of their clients. The concept that most of the shops is very hip, contemporary, and cool, Trostino said. It's promoting a lifestyle. The frozen yogurt that's gained popularity this time is a far cry from the sweet Froyo of the 1980s and 90s. It is tart and tangy, embracing its natural yogurty flavor instead of trying to be like ice cream. TCBY tried to introduce this type of frozen yogurt in the 70s, but the American palate wasn't ready for it. Now, with the sour and tangy flavors gaining popularity in the candy aisles, customers are willing to embrace less sweet in their treats. There's also a do-it-yourself aspect to frozen yogurt that makes them popular. Many are self-service, and many have a plethora of toppings to choose from. That includes healthy offerings such as berries and fruit, but also ice cream parlor mainstays like Heath bars and chocolate shavings. The perception of frozen yogurt as a healthy alternative has helped drive the trend, Mr. Trostino said. Shop owners talk about the dessert's low-fat and lower-calorie properties. Many also boast that their product contains live probiotic cultures which encourage digestive health. North Carolina State nutrition professor Carolyn Dunn warns that it's all in the portion size and the topping selected. It's also important to ask questions before you assume it's a health food, Dunn said. All Froyos are not created equal. It behooves a customer to ask about nutritional content and not just assume that because it has yogurt in its name, it's going to be lower fat, lower sugar, or lower calories, Dunn said. The primary Froyo market is women between the ages of 18 to 45, Trostino said. There are plenty of this age group in the Triangle. The Lensmeyers added that families are big fans, which was one of the reasons they picked North Raleigh for the first shop. And it's not just Raleigh, Mr. Trostino said. Frozen yogurt chains are expanding all over the country. The international chain Red Mango plans to soon expand to 5 locations in North Carolina, including Raleigh. Despite the oversupply of other shops in the area, local franchise owner Steve Marsh is confident that his shops will be able to compete. Red Mango is an experience, starting from the moment you walk in, Marsh says. Joe Bowman, an associate professor of marketing at NC State, warns that the strengths and duration of trends can be hard to predict, especially when the market gets saturated. The key is being nimble, being able to get in quickly when an opportunity arises, but also being able to get out of that in a cost-effective way when the trend changes, Bowman said. I enjoy frozen yogurt, but usually pick up a carton at the local supermarket. This eliminates the temptation of all those calorie-rich toppings. My wife likes pineapple yogurt the best. Another southern institution has been removed by the Wake County school system. Moon pies have been removed from the list of snacks sold at Wake County elementary school cafeterias. In addition, middle and high school vending machines will no longer contain snacks with more than 200 calories or packages with more than one serving. Whole wheat hamburger buns and hoagie rolls are now in, while most white breads are gone from white cafeterias. The changes for the 2010-2011 school year are part of ongoing efforts in Wake and nationally to make school food more nutritious. For instance, Wake in recent years has removed Little Debbie snack cakes, Sunny Delight drinks, and full-fat ice cream. There are some bad consequences for making the food healthier. Kids haven't been as likely to buy the healthier foods being served. The loss in potential revenue means that Wake has to do things like raise meal prices. Child nutrition programs are supposed to be self-supporting. House Autry Mills, the Johnson County producer of breaders for meat and seafood, have hired Raleigh Communication Agency French West Vaughan to capitalize on the company's upcoming 200th anniversary. French West will create print, broadcast, and online advertising for the Four Oaks Company and will handle public relations and social networking, founder and CEO Rick French said. House Autry's products, which also include mixes for hush puppies, biscuits, and cornbread, are available in more than 8,000 grocery stores in 28 states. As we approach the brand's 200th anniversary in 2012, it's an opportune time to celebrate and, more importantly, especially establish a value for the brand's incredible longevity, House Autry CEO Craig Hapgood said. The agency's goal is to boost distribution and sales while at the same time harnessing the enthusiasm of those who learn to cook with these products, Mr. French said. In our day of companies starting and failing in less than 10 years, it's almost impossible to think of a company that's been in operation for almost 200 years. Our congratulations to all those folks at House Autry, both in the past and in the present, who have been able to keep that company functioning like that. Now, September is an anniversary month for my relationship with the Triangle Radio Reading Service. I read for the first time on September the 12th in 1985. And during the ensuing years, I have met and counted as friends many interesting people who both listen and read for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And I have certainly been blessed. And we have letters to the editors periodically, and this question was asked, what can I do to keep bananas from turning dark when I make banana pudding? I've waited for the custard to cool and also dipped the slices in the lemon juice water solution. Both some help, but some of the slices turn dark. And the editor said that that's just one of the things that goes with banana pudding. You don't expect it to last long, and you need to cover it up good. But we are running out of time for today's episode of Thought for Food. Be sure and listen at this same time next month. And we hope you've enjoyed it. And I'm Bob Kruger, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And the content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. And so long, until next time.